Would you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Mike from Perfume Genius.
So now this is, okay, so let's start right there, because you just did the from Perfume Genius, right? And so people get this thing, right? Yeah. And for people who don't know, the first thing they probably think is band. And yet it's not a project, because it's really you and your partner, right?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it's me, but it takes a lot of people to make the album, it takes a lot of people to make the live show, but, you know, I write the music, and I could easily have gone under my name, but there's some weird freedom of not doing that, you know?
Yeah, and you know, Mike.
Yeah, also Mike. My last name, Hadrius, is not, you know, get mispronounced.
Four albums, Voice for LGBT, Seattle, Studied Painting, started Perfume Genius 2008. Have you ever thought about, or is there something at the top that no one ever asks you and you're absolutely amazed that they don't?
It's sometimes more difficult, for sure, to do an interview when the questions are really good. You know what I mean? Like when I, just because I don't have canned answers for it, so then I actually have to think.
Oh, now there's a role. Now, Mike, that's a role reversal. So you're saying that when you've got the A, B, C, D, E, and F, and you have the answers to the multiple choice questions, you can just go, okay, I can pull that one in.
Kind of. And also, well, when I first started doing music, everything was very candid. I didn't have any canned answers, you know, but I would end up saying, you know, I get nervous or shy. I would end up not doing my work justice with my answers because I hadn't, you know, it was all on the spot. And so now I guess I have sort of prepared, not speeches, but like, answers to common questions that I know are the truth, you know what I mean? That are actually like what I would want to say.
Does it frustrate people when you give those and then they're looking for something else that might not be the truth?
I'm not sure. I would have to.
Let's find out. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to go through some things that will allow you to do your canned answers, but then we're going to go, but then we're going to go deeper. And I'm going to start and get a little political, which I don't normally do in these, but it's appropriate here. This is a really interesting moment in history to be alive, to be a human being. Yeah. So do you think that this is like the craziest moment in time we've ever had?
I think things are just more maybe out in the open and more aggressive. But I've known half of America is racist and homophobic and misogynistic and awful my whole life. You know what I mean? Maybe they're more brazen now, and we have like a big evil baby that, you know, is the source of a lot of, you know what I mean? Like encapsulates all of that as the president. But I've kind of been riling against that thing my whole life. And it definitely is surreal and awful that it's so clear now. And I think it's made people have more, take more pride in like the racism in public and stuff like that. But I definitely am glad I grew up in the generation I did than one or two back, for sure.
There's a lot of talk about how you're exercising demons on this record. But haven't they been there all along? Where did it get to a point where it kind of got to this moment where you felt comfortable even getting even more into this?
A lot of it is just health and I don't know, maybe being a...
That's a lot of the demons are gone, so now you can talk about them.
Now I can process them, or, you know, since I'm not right in the middle of it, I can see the big picture, and that's when, you know, I feel like I have something to say. When I'm right in the middle of depression or whatever, you know, dark stuff that happened, I usually am just trying to get through it. I don't really have the time to, like, process it in a pretty way or a melodic way, you know what I mean? But it's usually after things happen that I can kind of sit down and step back and, I don't know, I'm a little more patient with my memories or myself when I'm writing. You know, I think this album, the last album's a little different. It's a little, the things I'm writing about are closer to how I feel now, or a lot more like intuitive and actually like about how I feel in the moment, which is kind of weird for me.
Well, and to be able to do that, the level of honesty, the level of comfort, having been through a lot of the things you've been through, which we're not going to go deep into because that's all there in the bio. That's implied. But it's more about when you have clarity and then going back to the times and thinking about the times you didn't have clarity. How do you get the clarity to find the non-clarity in the clarity?
I don't know. You just twisted me up in my brain.
Well, but you see what I'm saying. Yeah. In other words, a lot of things you're writing about are things that happened under the influence.
A little bit, yeah. I don't know. It's a very tricky thing. You know, and it's a tricky thing to try to navigate and not be too indulgent or to make it very personal, but still something that other people would want to listen to. You know, I don't want to just have like diary entries with like piano underneath, but I also don't want it to be so so flowery and like poetic that you can't relate to it at all. So it's just finding this balance of starting from a personal place, but turning it into a kind of a story or something that's going to actually get your message through. Because if you start with the message, if I just start with the moral or whatever, it's usually too cheesy or too, you know, people pass it off or dismiss it right away.
Being an icon, a friend, a bellwether to young people that are going through what you went through or worse and trying to figure it out, and the responsibility of being that advisor, coupled with the responsibility of making music for an audience and having a career and not wanting people to pick up this record and go, oh, it's about this, and this. How do you balance all that out? And do you think about it at all?
A little bit. And you can, especially, you know, I'm getting older, and I sometimes think about, oh, how can I convince people that maybe wouldn't be into it to like it this time? But it never actually leads to me keeping that idea with me when I write. Like, it's more like just, like, you know, like a career thing. But essentially, I always just write for myself and for the people that need it and liked it before. But the thing is, I didn't grow up listening to just like mirror images of myself and music, you know, in order to like feel less lonely in my problems. I listened to all kinds of music and connected to all genders and sexualities and stuff, you know, so that can get really frustrating to me.
Well, and you gave me a great thing there then. As you're giving advice and counsel to these younger people that are looking at you and going, he made it through, he's up there on stage, I want to be that person. Isn't it important, it's a rhetorical question, but isn't it important to let them know that they should have this wide berth of who they're listening to and understanding and, you know, and really knowing, you know, what they're going to go through, but also that the Patti Smiths of the world, that, you know, these people are not normal by any stretch of anyone's imagination either.
Yeah, but I think that people are othered or on the opposite side of, I don't know, whatever people think is normal, already know that. They're already, you know, connecting to and experiencing all kinds of different cultures just because they have to, because there's not a lot of representation for whatever theirs is. So, of course, you're going to be listening to and looking at other things because that's the majority of what's out there. But that's also why I find it important to be so specific about my sexuality and my experiences, because I wish I had more of that growing up. Not that it's necessary, but it's incredibly helpful to find connection with, you know, even more with somebody, like not changing pronouns or, you know, like having a man sing to another man. There's some music and books and movies and stuff that was out there when growing up, but not a lot. And I wish I would have had more of it. And that's why I do it. But it's not, you know, necessary for you to be a man that's kissed another man to like my music. But if that does feel necessary to you, I don't want you listening to it.
But this is still big anthemic music, right? This is big stuff.
Yeah. And that's the flip side. That's why it's so complicated. It's because, of course, it's like, I'm talking
it's still pop music.
It's music, and I work really hard at it. And you know, it's very complicated because I don't mind talking about all these things. I feel very purposeful and like a sense of duty that I don't resent at all, and it's very important to me. But I also just, you know, I make music and I put a lot of time into the feeling. And to be honest, with this album, I didn't think of it as this like, you know, like queer manifesto or anything. I was just writing. But I am gay and I am depressed and I have like a weird history. So like, I'm not going to deny all of that just so I'm like, well, just listen to the melody or whatever.
Don't you wonder if the Partridge Family or the Osmonds really had problems?
Oh, for sure they did.
No, no, we know. But you see, we found that out later in life. After we listened to all the candy gloss, then you find out about David Cassidy. Then you
I love that kind of stuff, though. Cause
me too.
Between the lines. And that's why right. I love older music is because they couldn't actually talk about anything, but it still would leak out into like one or two lyrics or just even some like haunting element to like the music itself. You know what I mean? You could tell that there's something messed up going on, but they're not saying, you know.
Well, I Think I Love You by the Partridge Family. Listen to those lyrics.
Yeah.
It's about obsession.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is hard work. 30 songs to get to 13. What is the filter for a Perfume Genius song?
It's something very difficult to describe for me, and it's essentially just this. It's just a very fine balance between kind of math and thinking and trying really hard, like work, and also having something really intuitive and spiritual and feel kind of magical. It's this weird combination of both of those, because the lyrics I'm very thoughtful about and very specific, and usually they're very plain spoken and simple, but I'm kind of obsessive about them. But I also can't have them be so overthought. You know what I mean? So it's this weird, when I can tell that it's born from something real, but also it has enough of like my taste and, you know, like the other side of my brain in it too, to make it actually a good song and not just like wild, you know, moaning. Unless that's what I want to do.
That's what you want it to be, and then that's awesome. So I went back, just as part of my fun, and put on the good headphones and listened to a bunch of other Blake Mills stuff. So how demo was demo, but he obviously gave you a lot of notes that led to this, and it's a two-part question. One is, what was that all about? And then two is, now you listen to it and you go, what do you go? Do you go, wow, I had no idea it was going to turn into this?
It's all over the place, really. Every single album I've done, there's been elements of like my demos that have made it on to the album, because that's just how I write, is by recording myself. And I end up with, you know, a lot of harmonies and even some vocal effects, or just, it's the mood is the most important thing to me usually when I go into the studio, is like keeping that mood the same. And if I can't recreate it or shift it or something in the studio, then I'll keep what's on there. But Blake, beyond just our tastes aligning or being different enough that it was fun when they kind of like would mix up, he's just a really brilliant musician, you know. And I wanted the music and the sound to be made in the studio, and that had a lot to do with Blake's playing, a lot of to do with his guitar. I didn't want it to be centered around my piano or whatever synth that I used in the demo. You know what I mean? I even thought of them more as placeholders this time than I had before. And so a lot of it, the sound was born from us working together then, like in the moment, and through his playing.
So you reference the concept of a big American pop star. That was really to get the juice and the energy, was it not?
A little bit. And a little bit was just to steal some of that like swagger and confidence that seems really foreign to me from like Bruce, who just has this sort of, some like clout or something. Then the way that he like moves and sings, same with like Elvis and just like croonery type dudes, that there's this like specific presence that seems very foreign to me. And I don't know if it comes across in the music, but I tried to sort of see what my version of that would be. Or what if I took myself as seriously? Or what if I, you know, prepared the music like it was really good? You know, because that's not how I usually work. I don't like be like, this, I'm going to make a big, amazing album and listen to, you know what I mean? I'm not certain they do either, but at least it kind of comes across like that. You know, that we should be so lucky to listen to these songs. And so I kind of try to adopt some of that arrogance.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside, but then songs by others in between.